I don't understand how we got so toxic and just so divided and so bitter. And I get why sometimes people just don't want to pay attention to it. And we all have friends like that. We have family members who just like, you know, it's all a circus out there. I get that.
Do you, President Obama, do you understand why it is so divided today? Because when you listen to the way some of the other people in your party are talking, currently the President of the United States, it sounds a little bit like this.
He is talking about doing away with the entire Department of Education. He's talking, he means it. This is not a joke. This is a guy who also wants to replace every civil servant, every single one. Thinks he has a right under the Supreme Court ruling on immunity to be able, if need be, if it was the case, to actually kill someone who he believes to be a threat to him. I mean, so I know this sounds bizarre. It sounds like if I said this 5 years ago, you'd lock me up. We gotta lock him up.
And they clap. The man who is the lead contender in taking away the power from Kamala Harris, who is to take up the mantle and just continue the Biden-Harris campaign. You've got these individuals here talking about, oh gosh, I don't know how divided we are. This is good cop, bad cop right now. You hear Obama out there, and he's supposed to bring, I don't know, what would you say, joy? To the campaign trail, is that his job? That he's supposed to be there in a position to somehow reinvigorate what the campaign is all about? Is he supposed to make people feel, is Obama now back on the campaign trail because he's supposed to remind you of the excitement and of the thrill of what it means to vote Democrat in the United States? Why is Barack Obama, first of all, where has Michelle Obama been? Second of all, why has Barack Obama waited until this point to throw his weight in the magnitude with which Barack Obama can throw his weight behind their candidate? It's a really precarious situation that the Democrats have put themselves in for this particular reason. Their main objective is to make you believe that Donald Trump is dangerous to the future of America's democracy. It's a republic, but I digress. That Donald Trump is a threat. That's the message that they want to bring home. They want to make sure that you remember, above all else, I know that your groceries cost more. I know that it's expensive to fill up your gas tank. I know that if you've got to replace an appliance in your home, it's outrageous. I know if you need to make a service call that the cost of energy has made the cost of services provided to you sky high and through the roof. I know you understand all of these things. But you have to remember, first and foremost, that in this election, you are voting for or against a real threat to our democracy. Democracy, democracy. That's the plan. That's the goal. That there is no policy that exists in your life that is more important to the threat that Donald Trump is to you. That's what they're trying to drive home. That's what they've been trying to drive home since 2015 when he declared his candidacy as a Republican for president. These people loved Donald Trump when he was a Democrat. He was a celebrity, real estate bazillionaire with, like, literally women on each arm, running beauty pageants, making the art of the deal, and they loved him. He wrote checks to them. They loved him. He said he was Republican, threat to democracy. People have their eyes open right now to the idea that maybe Donald Trump still isn't the guy you love. Maybe you still don't love the way he delivers his message. Maybe you think he's a little crass from time to time. But people are starting to do that really, really bad thing, which is start thinking about how policy affects their lives. Now, that's a brain thing. That's a thought process. That's not a heart thing. That's not the element of feeling that pushes you into making decisions because it's just a heart matter. I don't think you should ever eliminate your heart from a decision making process, but you certainly should not eliminate your brain. And Americans are understanding that Donald Trump was really good for America. And that's a hard pill to swallow if you've been led up to this point in time to be trained to have an emotional, visceral response in your gut that tells you that, above all else, the number one thing you need to remember is that he's a threat. So they're coming out and they're not talking to you about policy. They're not talking to you about how the Democrats have an opportunity to make your life better. They are in charge right now. Kamala Harris is in the driver's seat right now as the vice president of the United States, a vice president to a president who's been, let's just say, less active than prior presidents. Kamala Harris is the status quo. And if you want the status quo to change, you have but one choice facing you this election in 13 days. It's right around the corner. And when you see Barack Obama coming out onto the campaign trail and you notice that he's trying to get the hope back injected into the Kamala Harris campaign. And Kamala Harris, people were saying yesterday, I know it's like I see this and it kind of annoys me when like a swath of Republican media goes out and says, oh, Kamala Harris took the day off. She must be tired. Because they're playing on what the Harris campaign has been saying about Kamala, or the Harris campaign has been saying about Donald Trump, that he's exhausted, that he's taking days off. They're saying he's not fit to serve, so on and so forth. Yesterday, Kamala Harris isn't out on the stump. She was recording interviews and preparing to record interviews. She was working, but in a different capacity. I still think it's important to point out that she's not out on the stump talking to the voters, that she's trying to piece together interviews with, I think it was Univision or something like that. I don't think she's tired. I think she's sick and tired. I think that she's over this. I think that she has not been able to sell her message to the American people. And when she takes a step back and Barack Obama takes a step forward and tries to make Democrats cool again.
Now, I notice my palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy, vomit on my sweater already, mom's spaghetti. I'm nervous, but on the surface I look calm and ready to drop bombs, but I keep on forgetting.
Well, he's in Michigan. And Eminem was on the stage and Barack Obama goes out there and you know, gives us a little lose yourself. I think they got the lose part right. Barack Obama is not cool Barack Obama the way he used to be. And I would just like, if I were advising them, and I certainly am not, he doesn't have to be cool Barack Obama anymore because he has two terms of receipts of going into office and achieving what he set out to do, which is to transform fundamentally the United States of America. He pushed us very far into the progressive left. He changed the way Americans think and feel about politics dramatically in both ways. He made the Democratic Party more progressive, and he made the moderates in the Democratic Party scratch their head and wonder what they're supposed to do next. That's the implication that Barack Obama had on the Democratic Party. And to, in some ways, I think in fundraising ways, it's been a boon for the Democrats. But right now, Americans are looking at what is being offered to them on the left and the right. And regardless of personality, listen, there's a laundry list of things you could say about Donald Trump that have, over the course of the years he's been in the political eye, annoyed people. There have been billions of dollars spent over this amount of time in an effort to amplify those things, but also specifically to deceive you on the truth about Donald Trump. And honestly, if you know the truth about Donald Trump, you'll realize, brace yourself, Donald Trump is a great man. He's a good, caring, generous man. He has a big, bold personality. But if you were a Democrat, it wouldn't be a problem. The cardinal sin of Donald Trump is that he became a Republican. And Kamala Harris doesn't have anything that can compete with it. Kamala Harris is not in a position at this point in the election to prove to the voters that she has a plan, that she's any different. She's been asked about how she would be different, and she says, I can't think of anything that comes to mind. How in the world do you get to this point in the election and have that be your answer? And it's starting to show outside of just, you know, of course, we're a Fox News radio station here in St. Louis. We are the proud Fox News radio or Fox News radio affiliate. When you start seeing interviews that take place like this, I believe it's in Philadelphia with a diverse group of people who are supporting Donald Trump on MSNBC.
What are your feelings? And let me start with the women here about Kamala Harris.
She's a woman of color. I'm not putting her down because of that. And I'm not putting her down because she's a woman. I'm not a feminist, so I'm sorry. But at the end of the day, I don't think that she has the personality. I don't think that she has what it takes to go up against Putin and go up against these other presidents that are built for this. I don't want to be scared because my president is scared. I want my president to feel secure and manly and about it.
I love that she says, and about it. I understand that. The Chiron on MSNBC says black GOP voters explain their concerns about Harris. This is a MSNBC Alex Wagner exclusive where she's sitting here talking to them. And to look at these individuals who have reasons for thinking and feeling the way they do and the ability to explain it and the bravery to explain it when what we've heard from many people who have talked about, we've got guests on our show regularly who talk about being conservative in the African-American community. These people are explaining the things that are important to them. And these issues are colorless issues. Yes, MSNBC is like, let's go look at the black GOP voters and see what they think about Harris. But the issues that they're explaining in this particular instance, they're specific to Americans, to people who love America. And when America is at the priority, then our leaders, when they have that as their focus, our leaders can make America better for everybody. That's been missing in these last 4 years.
Brought up gender, right? Like, do you think it matters that she's a woman and people aren't comfortable having a woman in a top leadership role?
No, I don't think that, because most men, they love their mothers. They love their wives. So as a woman, most men, they respect the woman, but she just don't have the qualification or the education to really run America because she don't have the experience. She don't understand our struggles. Mm. And for me to believe you for another 4 years, you're crazy.
Yes, I think this woman's name is Justice. Yes, for you to sit here and, you know, pee down my back and tell me that it's raining when you're suggesting like what we need is a new way forward. We need to, how is it, turn the page. When you listen to Kamala Harris and all of the advocates that you have go out speaking on her behalf, they talk to you like your children. They message to you like your children. And there's a reason for that, because that's how they see you and they will govern you accordingly. They know what's best for you. You are their children. You will get what you get and you will not throw a fit. Come time Kamala Harris is inaugurated into the presidency. And you have these voters that MSNBC is going out to talk to. Credit, I guess, where credit is due for being willing to have this conversation. And they're saying, you gotta be crazy if you think that we're gonna listen to what you're selling us right here and believe that Kamala Harris offers us anything different, anything new. When people keep asking Kamala Harris about what she would do differently than Joe Biden, I would like one reporter to ask her, what did Joe Biden do that you don't feel he went far enough on? Because of the truth of the matter is, the real change that you will see with a Kamala Harris presidency will be a more dramatic, bolder version of what Joe Biden has already done. Much more progressive, much more aggressively progressive. That's the ball on the tee that has been handed to Kamala in her coronation into the presidency. And you, in 13 days, have the opportunity to say, hell no. It's up to you. Go vote. Missouri, you can get out and vote right now. Early vote. Illinois, you've been able to vote for like 2 years in this election or something. You need to go out and vote. Get your vote cast. And then tomorrow, go find somebody else to go have coffee and then go take them to vote. You matter. You matter right now. There's still points that we can put on the scoreboard. Let's do it before the game is over on November 5th. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk to our dear friend Jack Posobiec is going to be with us. His new book is out right now called Bulletproof, The Truth About the Assassination Attempts on Donald Trump. Jack Posobiec on The Annie Fry Show next.
I'm an optimistic person. I'm not hysterical. I laugh when people say, oh, you've got Trump derangement syndrome. Yeah. If you're a reasonable person, you should have Trump derangement syndrome. Right. And by the way, I think he has derangement syndrome about us, too. The fact of the matter is, this is a dangerous person. This is a stupid person. And that's a bad combination. And I think what we're forgetting, I keep forgetting it, and I have to keep reminding myself, is he's not just running for president. He's running to stay out of prison.
Jimmy Kimmel must be the most miserable person on television, unless it's a close second maybe to the person he was talking to right there, Joe Scarborough. Do you hear how these individuals who have a great influence on American people are talking about the former president of the United States? Yes, candidate for president, and we will decide that in 13 short days. But the way these people talk about Donald Trump, it really makes you pause and think why there might be other people out there who are potentially mentally unstable, for real, who hear this and feel emboldened by this repetition of words that are so egregious towards the former president of the United States and potentially the next president of the United States. Well, the man who wrote the book on it, along with Joshua Lysik, the book is called Bulletproof. His name's Jack Posobiec. He's also the senior editor at Human Events, and he's back with us on the Annie Fry Show right now. Jack, thank you for being with us today. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and exciting to talk to you about your new book, Bulletproof.
Well, Annie, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on. And as we know, America is becoming very fraught. I think tension has been ratcheted up on all sides right now. And even given a situation like we saw July 13th, Butler, Pennsylvania, or September 15th in West Palm Beach, even this incident last night with Kamala Harris, apparently, and a drunk driver who was driving the wrong way in Detroit, I think everyone knows that it feels like the country is on a knife's edge when it comes to this election. And you really want to step back and say, well, hold on a second. It didn't used to be this way in the United States. We didn't used to get this caustic over elections. There'd be a winner, there'd be a loser, you know, just like the Super Bowl, but people would go on with their lives. But something clearly has changed in the past couple of cycles, and it really is all centered around Donald Trump.
Yeah, that can't be denied. You know, you know Donald Trump. You know him on a personal level. You've advocated for him for quite some time. You think he's the right guy for the job. I do. Our listeners on the whole do as well. But what I can't understand is when I look at the people who are unstable about their disgust for Donald Trump, specifically the Republicans who have come out and tried to cross that line over into the Democratic Party, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, of course. I'm very curious about what these individuals are so scared of should they lose this Super Bowl, knowing there's another Super Bowl 4 years down the line for their candidate to try to vie for that opportunity once again. What is so scary that gets people to this point of being deranged over it?
Well, I think what's so scary, so you have two setups, basically. There's sort of the elites and then just the average person. So for the average person, I think that unfortunately there has been a psychological operation and a psychological form of rhetoric that's been used predominantly through mainstream media and corporate media over the last 8 years to explain that Donald Trump and Donald Trump supporters are extremists, that they are some fascist, xenophobic, racist, ethno-nationalist organization that is poised to take over the country. And it's also misogynist, can't leave that as well out as well. That's what you get from Joy Reid predominantly when she's not race baiting. And basically, they've been telling their followers that if this person or these people are able to come into power, that is, they are, instead of governing the same way that, you know, he governed for 4 years when he already was president, that instead it's going to turn this country into some post-apocalyptic dystopian future. Mm-hmm. from the elite side, the reason you're seeing the corporates do this, and unfortunately, a lot of people have fallen into that, and unfortunately, there are families and marriages that have fallen apart over this and many other things. And from the elite side, the reason that they don't support Donald Trump is because he stands as a detriment to billions and billions of dollars that are being made across multiple fronts, multiple industries, whether it's the China lobby that you see out of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and on Wall Street, whether it's Silicon Valley and their control over the country and pushing for regulation on that, and a Internet User's Bill of Rights, a Digital Bill of Rights, whether it's from the multinational companies that are involved in sending American jobs overseas through outsourcing, or even the military-industrial complex, when we see the support for foreign wars that, of course, are worth billions and billions of dollars. Remember, every time another tranche of billions is sent to Ukraine, that doesn't actually mean it's going to Ukraine. It's going into the pockets of the defense contractors who are then able to supply the missiles and the artillery and the tanks and all of these things. And so when Donald Trump comes around and says, no, I think we're going to actually pursue a peace deal instead of continuing the war, suddenly all of those financial, deep-seated financial interests run aground against him, because this is simply a candidate who can't be bought because he's a billionaire already.
Yeah, it is obviously very disturbing to those folks, and they out themselves, you know, on the regular. You don't even have to really scratch your head as to who's on what side. They can't help themselves. You wrote the book Bulletproof, and I want to talk about this. People can order it right now. We've got the link in the YouTube description of today's live broadcast. But you're telling a story that, for whatever particular reason, it's unfathomable to me why we are not talking on the regular about the details behind an assassination of Trump on former president's life. Talk to me about the odds of the massive security failure and the way those lined up on that day, the odds of that happening the way it did, combined with the odds of Donald Trump turning his head at exactly the right point at exactly the right time for him to still be in this election and race and with his family today.
Well, thank you, Annie. Yes. And so, as a sort of social experiment, my co-author and I, we calculated about 12 or identified about 12 independent security failures which took place on that day, each of which, if you had upended one of those failures, it would have prevented Thomas Matthew Crooks from being able to go up on that AGR building and then, using the AR-15 with the Red Dot's EOTech scope, be able to take shots, 8 shots at Donald Trump, by the way, and the ensuing crowd. And so the odds of all of those security failures happening on the same day that a trained killer, a trained marksman, would go with malicious intent to get those shots off, or 1 in 1 septillion. And we plugged all of this into GPT-4 Omni. And GPT-4 Omni, which is sort of the latest iteration of the OpenAI, we said, well, what's your assessment? What is the computer's assessment? What is the digital assessment? Because, you know, maybe I'm biased because I'm a supporter. I want to hear what the computer says. And the computer responded saying, the extreme unlikelihood of such a high amount of failures all occurring on the same day give rise to the question as to whether or not all of this happened by chance alone, and calls for further investigation into what really happened.
Yeah.
And that's what GPT-4 Omni said to us. That wasn't me. That wasn't, you know, me just going on the internet asking for comments. That's actually what OpenAI's response was. Basically, that it's incredulous and it flies in the face of mathematical reality and statistical reality. Now, you mentioned, what are the odds as well that Donald Trump would turn his head and that there would be a gust of wind at about 5 miles an hour at the exact moment? I mean, it's just impossible. It's completely impossible, other than what I believe to be a form of divine intervention that saved Donald Trump that day. And so we actually made that the cover of the book, not the picture, the, you know, iconic photo of Trump with his hand up. And I don't know, maybe we'd sell more copies if that was the cover, but I didn't want to do that.
That might be the sequel.
because And because the one for me is that picture of Trump when he's brought low and when he's on his knees, and it looks as though he's in prayer. He's giving that prayerful with his hands clasped together. And that's a way that we've never seen Donald Trump before. We've seen Donald Trump do many things, but we've never seen him humble himself and be humble in public, certainly ever.
Yeah.
And I said, to me, that looks like a man who's speaking with his creator and realizing that there is a force far more powerful than any of us that is truly behind all things. And we made that the cover of the book. And I've been saying this throughout the tour. And then Donald Trump himself, actually, I was at this event in Charlotte, North Carolina, Ballots and Bibles, and this 11th Hour Faith Leader event. And he came up and he was talking about that event. And he says, now looking back at my life's journey, I can see the hand of God guiding me the entire way. And on that day, July 13th in Butler, Pennsylvania, he said, I felt as if a great supernatural force threw me to the ground when that happened. Because if you go, and I went back and I watched the video and just to double check this, and I said, wait a minute, he goes to the ground very quickly, but before the Secret Service has arrived.
Right.
You know, he puts his hand to his ear. He says he realized that it was a gunshot because he could hear it and he could feel that. He said it was a tremendous force that hit his ear, but then he felt another force pushing him down and keeping him down. And he attributed that to the hand of God. And he said that he believes that his life was saved that day for a purpose, and that is the purpose that he is on now. And I have to say that I just, as a believer, I will always believe that. And I'll always believe that on that day, God saved his life. We can't understand why. We can't understand the machinations. But if you look throughout the Bible, and not to get all theological here.
Oh,
but,
please. We don't mind.
When you look through the Bible, you find so many instances, though, whether it's David, whether it's Solomon, his mistresses, whether it's Saul, who was incredibly corrupt, and God taking these flawed individuals and then raising them up and using them to go on to perform great and extraordinary deeds. But always, always, God requires that they perform an act of humility first to them, that they show piousness, that they show piety towards God. And when you look at that, it falls almost perfectly within a pattern that is set out by the Bible and many of the passages in there. And so I just have to say that that's exactly what I think it is. And, you know, when they talk about there being a gust of wind, that actually in every single instance of the New Testament that the Holy Spirit is referenced, the Holy Spirit is referred to as being accompanied by a gust of wind.
That's so true.
This is at Christ's baptism. This is at the cenacle where the tongues of fire and the coming of the Holy Spirit and Pentecost. And the word, the Anglo-Saxon word for gust actually is the word geist, which I didn't know, but I looked up in terms of this. And it turns out that's the same root word as the word ghost. So, you know, we're going into Halloween here, but it's also ghost, like the Holy Ghost.
Yeah.
And so spirit, of course, spiritus is a Latin word, but the Anglo-Saxon word is the term would be the Holy Ghost. And so there was that indelible link between a ghost and wind.
We're here, and I know you have to run, but I want to give you one opportunity to talk. We've had a lot of conversations about this on our show. We have three people on our show. We're all Christians. We're happy to say that's how we identify. Your message to those people who are conflicted in their Christian faith to vote for this man.
Yeah, sure. It's very simple. One person is incredibly anti-Christian. One person has come out and supported the locking up of pro-lifers, has supported the locking up of people who are patriots, has gone after traditional Catholics for praying the rosary, which is something that I do with my family. We're Polish Catholics. We've always prayed the rosary. It pretty much comes in one flavor that way. And this person has presided over all of that. And to have her come forward and say that she wants to continue this as president, with Democrats making mockery of communion, with Kamala Harris mocking Catholics at the Al Smith dinner, this is someone who is openly hostile to Christians. And if she becomes in power, if she's given power, remember, it's not just her, it's the 5,000 people that come along with her, and same with Trump, obviously. And these are people that would be incredibly hostile to Christians. So if you're someone who's out there like me, who sends your kids to a Christian school,
yep.
If you're someone out there that doesn't want your kids going to these woke indoctrination centers known as public schools, then she will work to shut down those systems, and you will see lawsuits and you will see everything coming out of the Department of Justice to crack down on this and come after your kids. And they will do so and tell you that it's for their own good.
Man.
And so that's, for me, that's, there's not even a choice.
Well, the book is bulletproof. The truth about the assassination attempts on Donald Trump, yourself and your co-author, Joshua Lysak, we appreciate you putting this together and making sure that this story doesn't just fade out of people's frontal thoughts. And with the election shortly around the corner, we're really grateful today, Jack, for your time. Thank you for being here with us.
God bless you, Annie. Thank you so much.
God bless you, Josh. Jack Posobiec, thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm you got to get this book. You've got to understand a lot of the things that went into the detailed look at the security that was put into place, the security failures that took place. And again, listening to Jack's words there specifically on the way that Donald Trump behaved in that moment, you know, one in a septillion. That's the phrase right there. That's the quote. And it's an amazing, amazing thing. You know, in my lifetime, I was born in 1984, but in my lifetime, I've heard forever about the assassination of JFK. I've heard people from maybe your generation say, I know where I was. I know what the desk was like that I was sitting in when that we got word at school. I've heard about the assassination attempts on Ronald Reagan's life. I've heard that he said when he was wheeled into the ER or the operating room or whatever it was, like, I hope you are Republicans. And the doctor said to Reagan, we're all Republicans today, sir, or whatever. Like, these are stories that stand the test of time. They come part of our understood history. They're huge moments in time. And we are just months from a bullet grazing the ear of a man who is simply running to be the president of the United States again. And we're not talking about it. Jack Posobiec and Joshua Lysak are, and we're very grateful for it. If you're interested in this book, it's called Bulletproof. It's available on Amazon. You can get it right now. You can get it today. If you're looking for a direct link, you can go to the Annie Fry YouTube description of our live broadcast right now, and I've linked it there. Let's take a quick break. Get Wiggins in here for Wiggins America next. I have no idea what you're talking about today. Did you send anything?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, it felt like what you just did was important.
Yeah, I was focused. I had a busy morning.
It was really good. I mean, the book itself, the content from this book sounds amazing.
Yeah, I want to read it. I've been looking to wait and see for it to get on Audible, but I haven't seen it yet, so.
You hear somebody talk about that kind of stuff, and you realize that, you know, the day's news, the word salad of Kamala Harris, whatever.
What are you talking about? She's totally...
You take a step back and you go, wow, this is bigger than just whatever CNN said last night. Like, this is a big deal. In light of you doing a really good, impactful interview.
Was that a compliment?
Indirect.
Clip it. Clip it right now. Clip it right now.
Indirect.
If you can give the compliment to Jack, I don't need any of the credit.
That's what I'm saying, is that he brought really good content. You were sort of just a vessel.
There. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
There's Orion.
Never mind. Clip it.
In light of that.
Delete it.
and the depth that we're all feeling from listening to a really good conversation. This is how to start a conversation. Very, very important.
So it wasn't a compliment. You actually have advice.
Yeah. This
okay,
is because I thought you guys it was kind of slow to start.
Oh.
You know.
Maybe you're just slow.
So I like let's get popping here, you know, and since we're in radio, I figured everybody can use this in their profession. But even if you're not in radio, you can use this to make friends.
This is phrases.
It feels like Ryan has some insecurities about his ability to communicate and make friends.
Oh no! I'm coming from a place of authority here. And I'm reading this from Yahoo Lifestyle.
Okay, yeah, that's where we get all of our really important news.
This is
we'll have Jim Carafano on at 105 to even things back out. Go on.
Right. Now, to bring it back to, you know, the
Israel
the
leaks.
Important things like that. But this is sort of this is the stuff that you take with you. 10 phrases, according to psychologists, that will help you start conversations easier. First one. Hi, I don't think we've met before. I'm blank.
What if you have met before?
Or what if you don't have a name?
I was really hoping it was just going to be hi.
The first step is to break the ice. Just say hello.
Yeah.
Speak.
If you have spoken before, that's tough, because then you walk up to them, you say your name, they say, yes, we've met before. Awkward. That's
why
I
don't remember their name.
I love all the people who are watching us on Twitter right now, because Jack Posobiec retweeted us and he's got like millions of followers. And they're like, wow, this is really interesting because, as you said, Jack Posobiec.
Right.
And now they're like, who are these yahoos?
Well,
hi, this is Ryan.
This is the Annie Fry Show. This is Wiggins America.
Why does he have
on
an
the
egg
Annie Fry
in his
Show
jacket?
next. I was going to ask that too.
Is that a fried egg on your jacket?
It is a fried egg.
Okay, go on.
I'm not sure why.
Good icebreaker.
Number two. That's a great point. Number two. I couldn't help but overhear you talking about blank. That's an interest of mine as well.
What if it's not? You just lie?
No, don't worry about that.
I have few interests.
You walk up to somebody, and no matter what they're talking about, you just say, I heard you talking about blank. I'm interested in that.
I'm just going to tell you, Yahoo Lifestyle, that all of these things are like, I'm at the point in my life now that I'm 40 whole years old, where if somebody comes up, I'm like, oh man, I got to pee. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah. Or you just go, dang, look at that. And you just walk away.
It's harder for people to argue with you saying you
coming.
Have to pee.
Yeah.
What's that? Oh, my phone's ringing. Like you're yelling at your phone from across the room.
Voices in my head. Sorry.
All right. Number three. What are you looking at / eating / drinking?
We're looking at this is
from psychologists.
What are you looking at?
What are you looking at / eating / drinking? You can't go wrong with conversation basics, says this psychologist. Asking someone about their experience in the moment is an easy way to invite low-pressure conversation.
You know that, like, the socially awkward have taken over?
Yes.
I think they wrote this.
I think there is no doubt about that. These questions.
I am socially awkward. I just know my role. It's quiet in the background, not having weirdo conversations with people that don't want to talk to me.
That's actually very true.
Here's the thing is I could see someone who's really like actually trying to figure this out, looking at this and saying, okay, got it. And then literally going up and saying, what are you looking at? Eating / drinking.
They've written these things on their hand and they like walk up and they look at their hand and they're like, oh no, that part rubbed off a little bit. What do I do?
What if they're eating / drinking and looking at all one thing? Like it's a smoothie. They're just staring at it. It makes it a little harder, doesn't it?
Are you drinking that or are you eating that?
Yeah, are you looking? What are you looking at? Looking at this thing right here. It's got boba in it.
One of these things is to go up to someone and say, hey, how's it going? What do you think? Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Look,
I'm firing you.
If anybody walks up to you and says, I couldn't help but overhear you talking about blank.
Yeah, creepo.
You'd go, that's a little strange. Although I just did that to a lady last weekend. I admit.
How'd that go?
She was thankful because it was in a line. We're at a theme park and we're in a line and she was talking to her husband on the phone. She said, man, this line is long. I just want to get a drink. She hung up and I said, ma'am, I couldn't help but overhear you. And I didn't mean to bother you.
Did you use your radio
but
voice?
That, I did. I was like, hey, this is Ryan Wiggins.
You're like, in a world, from you literally get a drink.
Never heard you use that voice.
From St. Louis, Missouri.
Did you give our call letters and the location of our tower?
KFTK 97.1. I typically can be heard noon to 3.
Can you please give somebody else's call letters when
what
you do
I
this?
Said to her was, I said, there's a line just for drinks over there. And she was so thankful. We did not become friends, though. I want to point out number four before we run out of time. This is from psychologists.
Gosh, we can't
and this
run
is a
out of
published
time.
Article.
Fast enough.
Isn't this weather surprising?
No.
One of the doctors says discussing the weather is a universal icebreaker.
But it only lasts, you can only do that for like 60 to 90 seconds, and then you have to do something else.
Yeah, if you don't have content beyond this, you're in real
trouble.
Like, this has got to be just step one, and this is the lightest stuff.
If you don't have content beyond that, why do you want to talk to the person to begin with?
Is this, see, George right here, he's got my line, and I appreciate you, George W. What you say, if you're ever uncomfortable, is you just walk into a room and you go, Donald Trump, am I right? And then you just go with whatever happens next.
That's a fact.
It's a 50-50.
Yeah.
Nobody be like, oh no, what do you think about him? I've heard some things.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the guy from The Apprentice?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The last one.
The guy from Home Alone?
Do you want to hear something funny?
This is like the premise of every 12:45 segment you do. You walk in and you say these things, and then we got to figure out how to squeeze 8 minutes out of
now
it.
Now listen, now this Dr. DeGangi says that neuroscience.
Are you sure it's not DeGangi?
Shows that laughter can raise the level of serotonin, a feel-good chemical in your brain. Now the problem is you have to then say something funny. Mm-hmm. You can't just ask if they want to hear something funny. I'm not sure.
You're like, oh, me too.
I think you have one of those like little fart keychains.
Fart key, because a fart is always funny.
Uh-huh.
Oh man, that's what all the boys in my life say, and you've now been added to the category.
If somebody walked up to me and did that, I really would become friends with them.
I will not be that person, not at all. Somehow or another, we're going to come back with Jim Carafano and talk about the Middle East, as well as Joshua Lloyd, who's running for Illinois' 13th district in Congress. We'll be right back.